right, it is Friday. Which means the weekend is upon us. This is Writer's Block, Jeff Blair and Stephen Brunt. We've got a lot of baseball to talk about today, a lot of hockey as well, obviously. Craig Forrest will join us later on and talk a little Euro. And also some intriguing news involving the Canadian men's national team, which we will get to later on in the show. But potentially, at least, potentially a major attacking gift for John Herdman. And we'll talk to Craig. We'll talk to Craig Forrest about that. Stephen, start with the Blue Jays. They are very much front of mind today after another loss, 8-4 to the Yankees. Another not good performance from the bullpen. But mercifully, I guess, the bullpen issue is kind of secondary to some awful, at least in this game, to some really bad base running.
Yeah.
A triple play that it would probably take you an hour to organize it. If you had to sit down, if you said, we're making a movie, and you know what we need to do as part of the movie? We need to have guys, everybody get together in a 1-3-6-2-5-6 triple play. It would take you an hour to direct that.
It was Little League. It was a Little League triple play. And, last night was hard to watch. Maybe then this whole series has been hard to watch, but.
You're right. Bullpen implosions are one thing. You look at the bullpen, you go, they got a bunch of guys who aren't very good.
Yeah.
Different than last night.
Yeah, it was different than last night. And, once again, fine line sometimes. Aaron Judge makes a catch that most guys don't make. You have a significant lead at that point in the ballgame. Maybe it plays out differently. Maybe it doesn't. I don't know. Another pinch hitter. Yankee pinch hitter succeeds. They made Gittens look like, the second coming of somebody.
Well, they got Gittens. They got Gittens last night. They got Sanchez the night before, and they got Clint Frazier in the first game.
Exactly. So, that's interesting that, whoever they throw out as a pinch hitter is eating up whoever the Jays have in as a reliever. It's the first time I have felt watching Charlie Montoyo during this stretch that he's kind of, that sense of despair kind of creeping in. And look, a lot of things can be righted with the series with the Baltimore Orioles potentially, right? That could right the ship here and get some wins and build some confidence. But I think we are at a point in the season and, there's acres of season to go. And many teams that have been in the Jays position at this point in the season have been able to make the playoffs. And, look at the run differential. They're still really good. This is a good baseball team with a shaky injured bullpen right now. Mm-hmm. But I think I've also seen teams in this situation come apart, it's funny. It's like, you're driving a car and, one lug nut falls off and say, well, you can fix that. It's just, but then that leads to something else that leads to something else that leads to something else. And stuff starts to creep in. And I'm not, I don't think the Stripling going at panic is directly that. But, the level of frustration, the scapegoating, you're kind of looking at the guy next to you in the locker saying, or you start thinking about yourself.
Right.
And saying, hey, well, my numbers are okay. And I'm worried about that a little bit from a distance. If I was a Jays fan, I would be worried about that. And I'm a little worried about Charlie Montoyo. I don't think his job's on the line right now. But, these are the kind of situations where managers get blamed sometimes.
Well, they are. And the bullpen issues are obvious and can be laid directly at the feet of the front office because they have not given their major league team a good enough bullpen to compete with the best teams of the game. They were fine the first month of the season, but everybody was saying in the first month of the season, they're getting overused. They're getting overused. And part of the reason they were getting overused was because of the Blue Jays philosophy when it comes to starting pitching. But the fact of the matter is for 2 weeks now, we've watched a manager with a bullpen. He does not have one guy. He does not have one guy that he knows will give him a good outing. He just doesn't. There's not one guy he can look down at the bullpen and go, well, we know that if we put him in, it's going to be okay. Jordan Romano's the closest to that, but Jordan Romano clearly can't pitch on back-to-back days.
Yeah.
And, you know, look, you know how we feel about Ross Atkins in the show? I like Ross a lot. I like what this front office has done. There's a lot of stuff that has gone on behind the scenes with this front office, with Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins, quite frankly, that people don't know about. This is a much better, much healthier organization than the one they inherited. I'm just going to say that.
It is. Yeah,
it's on a number of levels. But it's last night was different because I expected that from the bullpen. I mean, I just expect that from the bullpen now. I don't expect the sloppiness from Semien, Bichette, Guerrero that I've seen in these three games. And I'm not calling them out. I'm not calling them out. But I'm saying that is something removed from I don't have good pitchers. Nothing. I don't have anybody I can trust in the bullpen. That's something different. And maybe it's just dumb luck. It's possible it's just dumb luck. But the last three games have shown a team that looks very much as if it's lost a little focus, looks frustrated. It's got a lot of really good elite players making mistakes. That is not a good sign.
Yeah, that's, you know, like, you understand the frustration. Now, you know, in terms of the bullpen and depth, like, there's not a lot of teams that have, you know, six major league ready relievers, you know, to fill in for the six major league ready relievers they've lost. They may have overestimated some guys here for sure, but they have, you know, again, to be fair, they have lost a lot of arms.
Yeah, but can I just jump in here?
Yeah.
They signed Kirby Yates, a guy that they admit was a gamble health-wise. They yeah. said it was a gamble
yeah.
health-wise.
No, and they signed him at a gambling price.
Right.
But
they put a lot of trust in Julian Merriweather. Julian Merriweather's great. I've heard about Julian Merriweather for 2 years, but he can't stay healthy.
Yeah, I'm not, but Jeff, like,
there was nothing to suggest, Stephen, that he was going to go through this year healthy, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, but it's not just those two guys. Like, there's been an entire bullpen of guys that are hurt. It's not just those two guys.
David Phelps and Ryan Barucki.
Yeah, Ryan Barucki, AJ Cole. They're all guys, again, these are all guys who, they're not necessarily elite closers, but they're all major league relievers and they're all gone. So, There's been a lot, and the mystery of Chatwood, the good Chatwood versus mm-hmm. the really, really bad Chatwood. And again, we've talked about it ad nauseum. You can't replace those guys at this time of the year without, it's very, very difficult. So you need internal solutions. And the internal solutions organizationally, well, Patrick Murphy's up now, so that's happened. But, Nate Pearson, Thomas Hatch, right? Neither one of those guys are mowing them down. Whether you think it's a good idea to throw them in the bullpen for the rest of this major league season rather than to get them comfortable starting.
Yeah, the Nate Pearson thing.
No one's mowing them down in AAA right now, right?
No.
They're not. Neither of those guys are comfortable in AAA right now. It would be a mistake to just throw them into the bullpen and figure it out.
We had Casey Kandel, the AAA manager on Baseball Central. And by the way, it certainly doesn't sound like George Springer's joining the Jays for this weekend series in Baltimore. I don't know. I guess I saw on social media some people expected it. I don't know.
Well, Charlie kind of alluded to it, so that's why.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, according to Casey Kandel, George Springer has today off, and he is going to be playing again tomorrow. So he's played 2 days in a row, has today off. I suppose he could show up. I mean, we're not talking a cross-country flight.
No.
But Casey was certainly under the impression that George Springer is going to be in the Bison's lineup tomorrow and continue his progression. But beyond that, he talked about Nate Pearson, and Kevin Barker picked up on this and talking about Nate Pearson, his velocity. And he was talking about 95, 97, and I'm with Kevin on this. I'm not saying you have to throw 100, but I'm not certain Nate Pearson at 95 without a secondary pitch is, I mean, that's what we've seen. That's what we saw when he was up here the last time.
Yeah, look, it may.
So what I'm saying is the idea of him going in the bullpen,
well,
which I've
right.
talked about, but the idea of him going in the bullpen is not going to happen.
It's not,
doesn't make
like,
any
it's,
sense.
It's possible that Nate Pearson as a starter, would be, throwing 95, 97 could be effective rather than trying to throw 104. That might be his future. A lot of guys can survive at that point. And you're right, with the secondary pitch. But the main issue I'd have looking at Nate Pearson, just looking at his line in Buffalo, he's not striking guys out. So if he's not striking guys out in AAA.
And when would you use him, Steven?
Well, that's it, right? So you're not, you need him to get his feet on the ground and get mm-hmm. comfortable and be confident. Like Patrick Murphy's got, is a slightly different character. He's got a really live arm. I think they're willing to take that slight chance with who, but he was pitching better, you know, in Triple A. Tom's Hatch is just coming, mm-hmm. just starting to get stretched out. So maybe he's an option, but I think so. You don't really have those guys to throw in, and you know, again, if you look at the rest of, you know, the kind of AAA arms, they're TJ Zoik and Jacob Wagyusback and, you know, some of the other guys we've seen, we kind of know what they are. That's like a lot of teams, AAA rosters. So yeah, they're in a bind. And I think to some degree, yeah, maybe they should have had more guys. I'm not sure who those more guys would have been. To some degree, they've gone down like 10 pins in the bullpen, and that's not great. A lot of injury woes. The rotation has stabilized nicely, which was the thing we actually talked about at the beginning of the year more than anything. But I think, these things can kind of creep around a team like a disease.
Yeah.
That once you frustrating losses, I can go back historically with this team more than most people around, but, bullpen stuff really eats at a team. It eats away at team confidence. It eats away at concentration and focus. It eats away at, camaraderie.
Painful. As painful as it is for us to watch that.
Yeah.
Imagine those guys out in the field.
Like, all I have to do to say to any longtime Blue Jays fan, longtime Blue Jays fan, say the two words, Joey McLaughlin. Right? Like, yeah. That's all you have to remember. Yeah. Those were really good teams, right? Yeah. And they couldn't find a guy, really, until Henke. They couldn't find a guy to close.
Yeah. I mean, I guess they're playing the Orioles tonight in the first game of the 3-game series. The schedule gets softer.
Yeah, and they should, and they may just bomb out the Orioles with their offense.
Right, but what kind of, this is where I look at this team right now. They're 2 games under 500. I'm just going to leave aside the standings for a minute. But they're 2 games under 500. And they are there with Robbie Ray having a year that nobody out there could tell me they saw this from Robbie Ray. I thought he'd be good. I thought he'd be fine. I did not think.
Yeah, he's been tremendous.
He'd be in
super
conversation
super
for an
consistent. All-star. Yeah, super consistent.
Yeah, so I didn't see that. Steven Matz has been okay. Steven Matz has been better than what I thought it'd be. Yep. Alek Manoah's done something that, a lot of people in spring training got on the Alek Manoah bandwagon, and I was kind of reluctant because I was on the Nate Pearson bandwagon, and I thought that the seating maybe felt the same. But Alek Manoah's given you more.
Yep.
He's given you stable performances.
That's exactly right.
You do not worry about Alek Manoah. If you told me we'd get all that out of the rotation.
Add Ross Stripling.
And Ross Stripling. And, oh, by the way, Vladdy would be 2 times the player he was and would be so good defensively that there'd be no discussion about can Vladdy play first base. If you told me that Marcus Semien would look like the 2019 guy and that Teoscar Hernandez would do what he's doing, and that Randall Grichuk would have that start. Steven, I'd look at that and go, you got to be better than 2 games under.
Well, yeah, and their run differential would tell you that, too.
The run differential, that's the second highest run differential of any team with a record under 500.
Yep.
I think second or first, and the Marlins are the other team.
Yep, so no, that's...
Sorry, with a plus run differential.
Yeah, no, it's all true. It's true now. Ebbs and flows in 162. These things, there are moments, right? There are moments when teams look... remember in Boston, the last time they scored a million runs,
mm-hmm.
It looked like you can't possibly pitch to these guys. Well, somebody found a way to pitch to them after that.
Yeah.
Randall Grichuk, the guy, now he did have a key hit in the game last night, but, a guy who looked like he'd, kind of discovered something and he wasn't going to be as streaky. Well, he looks a little more like the backside of the streaky Randall Grichuk right now, right? Roddy Tellez has been awful.
Yeah.
Just awful. And I'm kind of, I'm not even sure what that conversation is anymore around.
But I
him.
See. But
I know these are those are not. Yeah. I know, but you still have
correct.
You still have, and Springer hasn't played. But right. You still have.
But that's the other thing. Again, if you told me George Springer would have played 2 games or 3 games or however many games, and this lineup would still be producing, I haven't figured out yet, Steven, if the opportunity has passed, or if the opportunity is in front of us now that they're playing.
Well,
the Orioles.
Well, talk to me in a week. Because honest to God, I think that's they need to crush this part of their schedule,
mm-hmm.
right? They do need to crush this part of their schedule. Now there's some Tampa in there, so it's not all mm-hmm. stiffs, but this the Baltimore, Seattle, Miami part of their schedule.
Although
they need
I
to
gotta
crush
say
it.
This, Seattle's record is the same as the Blue
yep.
Jays.
Yeah, it is. No, it's but it's not. You're not playing, you know, it's not Tampa, right? So you're going to be, they know they have to make a little bit of hay here. They absolutely do. And if they don't, like if they scuffle, you know, through these Baltimore games, it's you know, that's going to feel dire. Then you're going to be looking at it and say, hang on a second, what do we got here? And then what do you do?
Were you surprised? And again, I always feel like I'm treating you like the Charlie Montoya whisperer. And it's only because, you know, you spent so much time with him, and given the way the pandemic's kind of, it's almost like I've gone 15 months without, I feel like I've gone 15 months without really talking to him. We've seen in the course of a couple of days, we had a little bit of fun with it, the F-bomb from Charlie, which other people have said is out of character as well.
Yep.
And then last night, this kind of bizarre, everything's okay, everybody's happy, you guys aren't seeing what I'm seeing, which was, I'm not saying it's not true, but it was a little too dismissive.
Yeah, it's probably, but it's, you know, he's a human, right? And it's getting
that's
to
fair.
Him. Like, yeah, and, you know, so he's, every night, he's the guy that gets trotted out for the Zoom call. And look, I don't know how much time Charlie spends. I think none, probably, you know, worrying about what people are saying about him on social. But, you know, he is the guy that's trotted out for the Inquisition every night, right?
And it would be really nice. It would be really nice if Ross Atkins was made available to talk about the bullpen, to be honest.
Yeah, it's probably time for somebody else to talk in general. But, you know, but Charlie's the guy that's the manager's job. Now, normally the manager's job, you know, of course, now it's a little more stage managed. They tend to stand behind the backdrop, but you know, normally the manager's conversations with the guys, the men and women covering the team, sitting in his office or on the field, but you know, there's a more of a kind of a normal give and take, right?
But I think in some ways it may be almost more important this year. You know, like I know, Ross has been available. Ross has done regular availabilities, but you know, I look at what Brian Cashman did in this last trip. You know, Brian Cashman has been out there answering questions about his manager and about his team.
Yeah, you don't want him out there every day, but there are moments in a season when that's part of the gig. Yeah. I 100% agree, and I think that this would be one of those moments.
Yeah, I just think somebody has to. Someone's got to answer some questions other than Charlie.
Charlie's only going to, he doesn't necessarily have answers for some of the questions. No. You know, and again, I know he's the buck stops with him.
You know what you can't ask Charlie? You can't ask Charlie why Tyler Chatwood is still in the team. You can't ask Charlie.
Well, right now, last three outings, they need him desperately. He's the only guy who's thrown better than anybody. But I know you're right.
You know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Charlie can't tell us why somebody who was underperforming is still here. I mean, he can't. That shouldn't be his job. All he can say is, well, he's here.
Yeah, no, he doesn't know that, like, as many a manager has said, not just Charlie, you know, he's responsible for the 25 or 26 guys, right? That's mm-hmm. it. Like, that's his job, is to be, to play games using the players that are made available to him. That's his, you know, what's going on in Buffalo, or what's going on outside the organization, within or outside the organization, beyond the major league roster, is not his job. So he's playing the game with the cards he's got. That's his, and he's, you know, that's true, right? That's 100% true. And yeah, like, it's not like they don't have input into, you know, decisions about players being kept or players being demoted or players being released. But you know, his job is the team, that is the lineup they put out there every night. And, you know, he has a limited array of options. And, you know, the unpredictability of some of those mm-hmm. options, I'm sure, is as baffling to him as it is baffling to, you know, Joe Fan in some ways. Like, the nights when Tyler Chatwood can throw strikes versus the nights when he can't throw strikes at all. I don't think Pete Walker knows when those are coming. I don't think Charlie Montoya knows when they're coming.
I don't know if the pitchers know when it's coming.
No. So, like, again, it would be, in some ways, it'd be easier to just say, well, you know, this guy's in a major league arm. But he is a major league arm, except when he isn't. You know, like, it's really, so I haven't talked to Charlie directly in a long time. I've certainly, you know, connected with him occasionally. He's a human being. He's frustrated. He knows, you know, the good on this team. He knows the potential on this team. And he knows that, you know, he hates losing those games that way more than, you know, than just about, than anybody would. Like, if you're a manager watching that triple play last night, like, what do you do? You know, you can't manage your way out of that triple play. That's a bunch of individual decisions. Now, you know, should they have had the contact play on them, et cetera, et cetera. So you can ask yourself that. But what unfolded after that, cue the circus music part of it,
that's
not on a manager.
And here's the thing, Steven. It was your three best players.
Your three best players, yeah.
Including your most veteran player.
Yeah.
And all of whom, by the way, have played well.
Oh, yeah.
This year. Like, you can't, Charlie can't unmanage a triple play.
No,
it can't be done, and
so that's all. You know, sitting there, you're helpless, right? And and that's an awful, it's an awful feeling. I think it's an awful feeling when I kind of imagine sometimes when he and Pete are standing there next to each other in the dugout, what the conversation actually is, where Pete gets on the phone and comes back and says, "No, he's not feeling it tonight."
Yeah. Pat Tabler is our Blue Jays analyst on Sportsnet. We will talk to Mr. Tabler and see what his read is of the Blue Jays. This is Writer's Block on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Jays will take on the Baltimore Orioles tonight in the first of three games, the chance for the Blue Jays to right the ship after a three-game sweep by the New York Yankees. What time's the game tonight? Is it 7 o'clock or 7:30?
You're asking the wrong guy here. Anybody? Anybody? First pitch? I don't know what they're doing with the Baltimore, what the standard starting time in Baltimore is these days.
Yeah, we'll find out here. But anyhow, it's at Oriole Park at Camden Yards. It'll be the first of three games. And we mentioned the schedule gets a little easier, though there is that small matter of the Tampa Bay Rays.
Yes.
Kind of lurking.
Mm-hmm.
Lurking there. It is a 7:05 first pitch. And it'll be Tommy Eshelman for the Baltimore Orioles. Bruce Zimmerman was shelved with a biceps injury. So it'll be a right-hander against Robbie Ray. Again, first pitch is 7:05. And if you missed the first part of the show, Casey Kandel, manager of the AAA Buffalo Bisons, certainly under the impression that George Springer will remain with the Bisons this weekend, although he's not playing today. It's a scheduled day off after 2 days. And you can cue the music.
Yeah, although they've surprised us on those before, haven't they? Like that.
Oh, yeah.
People kind of just show up. So.
Oh, yeah. There have been some interesting twists and turns with the Blue Jays this year when it comes to communication. So I'm still taking the approach when he's here in uniform and plays two games in a row, then I'll believe that George Springer actually exists. Until then, it's Semien, Bichette, Guerrero. Let's bring in Pat Tabler. He is our Blue Jays analyst on Sportsnet. Pat, thank you for joining Steven and myself. Look, we're not with the team, obviously. With the team, obviously, but we've seen examples in the past 3 days of a team that looks like it's frustrated. I don't know. I'm not going to say lack of concentration because I'm not there. I don't know what that triple play was last night. But what are you seeing? You've been around teams. What are you seeing here beyond the obvious, right, that the bullpen isn't very good? What are we watching right now?
From where I'm sitting, it looks like the guys are trying too hard at times, that they want it so bad. And it's a good group of kids and all that kind of stuff, but at times they're trying to force it. Like, I thought that triple play, I thought they were trying to force the action instead of reading and reacting to what the ball was doing and what was going on. The Vladdy play the other day on the comebacker when they had second and third and nobody out, I think he was trying to force the play, trying to make things happen instead of, again, reading and reacting to the play and understanding that. I don't want to call it frustration like you don't. I don't think it's that. I think it's guys who want to win and they're behind and they're trying a little bit too hard and trying to make things happen when there's really nothing there to do it. You just have to, like, take what the game gives you and go from there. They've made some errors. They've done some things where they forced things defensively that didn't need to happen. And, you know, when you play the game and your margin for error is so small, it's razor thin, a base running blunder here, a kicked ball in the infield there, a bad pitch selection there cost you ball games against good teams. They're going to beat you when you make those kind of mistakes. That's all it is for me. And they don't have, you know, they have good players. They don't have enough good players right now to get them over the hump. Or when they make mistakes, they can't cover it up with better players or better pitching or whatever you want to call it to overcome those kind of mistakes. And it seems like every time they make that crucial mistake late, it's costing them games.
Pat, I can go back long enough with the Jays, you know, back to, you know, even the 83 team where, you know, a really good young team, first place in the summer, the beginnings of a good, you know, team that would be good for a long time, but their bullpen killed them that summer. And I just remember how things kind of cascaded, you know, from blown, you know, blown saves cascade, right? Games, when you lose, you blow leads in games that you should win. I've seen that kind of, you know, the ripple effect through a clubhouse, through a roster, the locket, you know, concentration waivers, guys, as you said, try too hard. You know, everybody's trying to, you know, to trying to fix what's broken, and it's very hard to fix what's broken in that case. But in that case, they, you know, that ruined a season really for them. You know, that hasn't happened here yet, but do you feel a little bit of that creeping in here potentially?
When you have a young team, and I've talked to general managers about this, when you have a young team, you better have a good bullpen, because if you have a good bullpen, then you win the games you're supposed to win. If you don't win those games, it's very deflating on young players. And young players can kind of go up and they can go down, and they move with the ebb and flow of the season, and they get high and then they get low. When you're supposed to win those games, you need a lockdown bullpen to do that, and then that gives everybody confidence. When you don't and you lose those kind of games, it's very deflating for young players. I've been there. I've been on teams like that when we had a lot of young players in Cleveland, and we'd score 8 runs, but we'd give up 10. It was really deflating, and until the Indians got their pitching in line and got their bullpen in line, and they started winning in the 90s, you know, it was really hard. It was really hard. I lived through that. So I know what some of these players are going through. What they have to keep doing is just showing up at the ballpark and not trying to do too much. It's a team. You know, you do what you're supposed to do. The next guy do what you're supposed to do. And if everybody pulls from the same rope, they're going to be fine. That's what I see.
Yeah, we should also mention, by the way, that the Jays were without Teoscar Hernandez yesterday, who's put on paternity leave, and I don't believe he will be with the team this weekend. Oh, certainly not. I don't know, but I would be surprised if he's with the team today. We're getting to the point where George Springer will probably return, hopefully return. And I don't want to get into that game about how you fit him in the lineup or where he goes and who sits, et cetera, et cetera. But I did want to ask you, you know, Randall Grichuk's a guy who at the start of the year we thought, boy, he's a guy that might be traded. Then he got off to a great start, and we thought, no way you can trade Randall Grichuk. And, you know, we thought, well, when Springer comes back, probably going to be Lourdes Gurriel Jr. who's going to sit. And now Randall Grichuk kind of looks like what Randall Grichuk has looked like in the past. What are you seeing with his approach? Is there anything, are people pitching him differently than they were when he was on a roll?
No, I just think until last night, he had a couple of hits last night, hit a ball hard back through the middle. I think he was reverting back to swinging at a lot of pitches out of the strike zone and not being real patient. That's the one word that I would describe with Randall that I've seen the first 6 weeks of the season was he was very patient. He was letting those pitchers come to him, and he was taking what they were given. And if they threw him away, he wouldn't bite on it. If they threw him breaking balls in the dirt, he wouldn't swing at it. The last week or so until last night, he just looked anxious and he wanted to get things done. And that's when you just like take a deep breath and you say, okay, let's slow things down. Let's calm down. Let's don't be too anxious up here at the plate. Let's just try to slow the game down. That's what he did last night. That base hit through the middle was the Randle that we saw the first 6 weeks of the season. Then he got sawed off, and he still got a base hit. He just needs to do that. And over 162 games, 6 months of baseball, you're going to have those highs and those lows. You're going to walk up to the plate sometimes saying, I have no chance to get a hit. Been there, done that. You know, like, I have no chance to get a hit here. I don't know why. Then there's other times you walk up to the plate and you're like, I don't care who's pitching, Roger Clemens, Bob Gibson, I don't care. I'm getting a base hit right here. That's just the way it is. And it's hard to describe. It's hard to quantify. Say, well, why can't you bottle that up and do that every single day? You just can't. So you swing with those flows, those up and down flows, and you deal with it. That's what makes a good everyday player. And Randle will be fine. I saw some good things last night. So he should have a good series against Baltimore because his numbers at Camden Yards are ridiculous. So he should be just fine, I think.
Pat, you know, again, it's tough for all of us because we're watching this team from a distance, right? There's not a lot of you. Now, you saw them a little bit in Florida, and so you've been closer than the rest of us have. But, you know, I'm watching Charlie Montoya, who I did get to know a little bit, you know, watching him through Zoom calls, and you can see how exasperated he is right now. You know, like, he's the most upbeat guy in the world, but this has worn on him, obviously, and you've noticed it, especially the last week. You know, describing the kind of situation, you know, in the kind of situation you described with a team that, you know, where guys are maybe trying too hard and, you know, obviously the bullpen thing is an issue. Doesn't seem to matter which card you play. It's the wrong card. What's the manager's job during a stretch like this?
I think to keep everybody confident and to keep everybody calm. You know, you start panicking. I think everybody else starts panicking. But you, at some point, you know, you got to lay down the law and say, okay, enough of this. We need to win these games. We got to run the bases better. We have to get outs when we need to from our bullpen in the seventh, eighth, and ninth inning. So it's a delicate balance. For me, the good managers have a way of pushing not the right buttons and moves during the game. That's a given. You have to do that. But pushing the right buttons to the guy to, like, motivate them to try and get them to the next level. Do you know what I mean? Say, okay, you've been walking, guys. You got to figure out how to get this guy out. And you got to throw strikes. And, you know, I don't know what that is. In the olden days, it was, hey, you're not throwing strikes. We're sending your butt back to AAA. You go figure it out down there. I don't know if they have that. You can do that. I don't know if they want to do that kind of stuff. But a good manager doesn't panic, but at the same time, he's got a lot of fire on some of these guys. And not the rah-rah, you know, let's have a team meeting and talk this thing out stuff. It's just, you know, hey, we're winning tonight. And we're going to figure out a way to win or else kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I don't know if they're there right now. I don't know, you know, the psyche of the team because I'm not around them like I was. But, you know, it's a delicate balance. And they're young kids. And you got to push them at certain times. Sometimes you got to back off. Sometimes you got to kick them in the backside to get them going. I mean, there's all kinds of things. Lineup changes, you know, there's all kind of things that you can do. Are they there yet? We'll see. What I do know is they're through a meat grinder of a schedule right now. And they got through that game under 500. They haven't played terrible baseball, but they haven't played winning baseball against good teams. And that's the next step. And I hope from here until the All-Star break, you know, they've got some games that they can win if they go out there and play the game the right way, get good pitching from top to bottom, and they can win some of those games and get back in this race.
Yeah, thank goodness for those early games against the National League East teams, because boy, those have kept them above water for sure. Tabby, thanks for doing this, man. Stay safe.
Okay, guys, we'll talk soon. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks,
Pat. Absolutely, take care.
See you guys.
Okay. Pat Tabler, Blue Jays analyst on Sportsnet. And Sportsnet 590, The Fan again. Orioles, Jays, first of three tonight, 7 o'clock, first pitch from Oriole Park at Camden Yards. The head coach of the Montreal Canadiens, Dominique Ducharme, his status for tonight's game is...
Unclear.
Unclear. Yeah, yeah. After it was an inconclusive COVID-19 test.
Yeah.
So, I imagine we'll probably, I would think there would be some sort of announcement before game time. There's been no indication yet as to any, whether any players need to be anything further. I quite often when I see these things now, you almost just assume that it's a false positive and, and that stuff will get straightened around. But we're waiting the results of that test. Vegas and Montreal, that series shifts to the Bell Center tonight. 8 o'clock puck drop. Last night, the Tampa Bay Lightning eked out a 2-1 win over the Islanders and continuing an impressive road run in the playoffs. They're 6-1 away from home. The Tampa Bay Lightning are. John Bartlett has the call of that series. He'll join us next. This is Writer's Block. All right, there is a report, and we are waiting to confirm it, that Dominique Ducharme, the head coach of the Montreal Canadiens, has in fact tested positive for COVID, which would mean that he'd be isolated for 10 days. But again, that isn't official yet. We do know, however, that there was an irregularity, I believe, with his test.
That was the wording, yeah.
So he missed this morning's skate. And again, we'll await official announcement. We'll be joined by Ren Lavoie in the next hour. So maybe we'll have some news.
If anyone knows what's cooking, it'll be our good friend Ren Lavoie.
I bet Ren took the test for Don. He was beside Don.
Exactly. Yeah. No, he has been our Habs whisperer all year.
Yeah.
And he has had the pulse of this team in a lot of ways. Yeah. Think about it, he's the guy who's least surprised that they are where they are right now.
Yeah. What the other series, you look at the Tampa Bay Lightning and we're so used to them being so good and I don't know if I'd say necessarily we take them for granted, but watching them win last night and, then looking at how they have played on the road, I mean, you're really getting the sense that this is a team that, and it's probably no surprise because they've won things, but you really get the sense that this is a team that understands how they have to go about just taking care of business. I know that sounds like a cliche, but I really get that sense with the Lightning. They're an amazingly talented team. They've got a lot of great talent. But at the end of the day, Steven, I just get the sense that John Cooper and those guys, there's a punch-the-clock aspect to what the Lightning do when they have to do it.
Well, then
that is remarkable.
And they're facing a team right now that unless you approach them that way, they will beat you.
Exactly.
Right. That's the interesting thing is watching Tampa with all that skill. And the experience of obviously winning a cup, but facing a team that if you take it, you take a breath at the wrong point, they're going to be all over you. Like I tip of the cap. And then, again, this still kind of feels like a long series to me.
Yeah. I'm with you in that. The Lightning won 2-1 last night. They've taken the lead in the best of seven series, 2-1. John Bartlett had the call of the series for Sportsnet. He joins us on Writer's Block. John, thank you for doing this. I think what Brunt says is kind of right. It really does. To me, it's had the feel of a long series right from the get-go. But watching a bit of the game last night, and I was flipping back between the baseball and hockey, and then looking at the Lightning road record, you really... Look, it's a really talented team. We know all that. But there is a real business-like aspect to how they go about things, isn't there?
Yeah, there sure is. And the biggest difference, I think, for the team is, like you talked about, it's the way they play defensively now. And I think they're responsible and they understand exactly the kind of game they need to play in the playoffs, especially against the New York Islanders. It's kind of funny. In one sense, they beat the Islanders almost at their own game last night. So they have all that scoring talent, all that power, but it's all about being responsible on both sides of the puck that makes them such a dangerous team now, because I think they learned their lesson that in the playoffs, you can't necessarily try to score your way out of trouble. There's a different element to the game. Tampa learned that. That's why they're the defending Stanley Cup champions. And I think that's the kind of game that they're bringing right now again against the Islanders, and I agree too. I still think it's probably going to be a long series. It would not surprise me at all if tomorrow night the Islanders even it up, and then it's, you know, splits in both Tampa and New York, and we'll have a best of three and see where things go from there. That wouldn't surprise me to the least. But Tampa showed how strong they can be on both sides of the puck again last night.
In some ways, that's the lesson they learned 2 years ago, isn't it? Right? Like, that goes back to that Columbus series, doesn't it?
Sure does. And really, everything goes back to the Columbus series. When you look at all the numbers that they've put up since then, and their series wins and the situations they've been in and how they've played, you can trace it all back to that loss to Columbus, where, you know, they really felt like they were a team that could pull it off. And then to have what happened, that was their biggest lesson. And I think that, you know, they still heed the warnings and the lessons they learned from that series to this day. And they know a Barry Trotz team is a very tough team to play, coach team is a very tough team to play against. And they know from last year, even in their conference final meeting, how tough the Islanders can be. And this year, Casey Cizikas is in the lineup, so they have that identity line, you know, looking the way it normally does. Last year, they didn't have that after game two. So I think John Cooper and the Lightning know exactly what they're up against, and they can't let the game get away from them. And it's kind of funny, even Barry Trotz had talked about when the rough stuff started to happen a little bit in game two, you would have thought it was the Islanders trying to rough up the Lightning, and yet New York was kind of saying they're trying to draw us in because they know that we can compete with them 5-on-5. In fact, we're better than them 5-on-5. They're trying to draw us into penalties so they can put their super power play to work against us. So it's they understand the dynamics of both of those teams and what it's going to take to try and win. And Tampa showed that when they can control that sort of style of play, that they can come out ahead, and that's what happened last night.
You know, one of the things that's really been a revelation, I think, this series, and Mike Bossy talked about it a little bit in our show yesterday, but you know, the Tampa Bay Lightning defensively, their defense core is more than just Victor Hedman. I mean, I'm watching that game last night. They had something like 21 shots. That's a really good unit that sometimes gets overlooked, isn't it?
It sure is, and when you think it's crazy that they didn't score a goal in the playoffs until game two when Hedman and Jan Ruda finally put the puck in the net and all the shots ahead. Victor Hedman has 31 shots in the playoffs and one goal. I mean, that's killing people in their pools. You know, I don't need to name any names who might be hurting, but I know somebody who took Hedman and it's killing them. It's not something you would expect, especially with the strength of their power play, that you would go to the third round of the playoffs before you get a goal from your back end from the Tampa Bay Lightning. You know, and I think between Victor Hedman and Ryan McDonagh, Jan Ruda, and, you know, Sergachev back there, Chernak's played some good hockey too. They really do bring a different sort of strength and dynamic, and they all have their own strengths that they bring. That's the really funny part. I think a lot of us were amazed they went that far without getting a goal from their D, just because of the strength they have from the back end to be the ability to move the puck and create offense and generate offense.
John, thanks so much for doing this, man. Appreciate your time.
You bet, guys. All the best. Take care.
It's John Bartlett. He'll have the call or has a call this series between the Lightning and the Islanders. And yeah, the Lightning. You know, we talked a little bit yesterday about the Vegas Golden Knights and the support they get from their defense corps. But the Lightning just, again, you can tell a team that's won a championship, mm-hmm. you know, because elite players end up showing up at the right time and doing some of the small things. You know, again, like shot block. I know sometimes I think we make too big a deal out of shot blocking. You know, do you want your best players blocking shots, that whole thing. But to me, at this point of the playoffs, Stephen, you really do start talking about stuff like commitment and all that stuff. And you just see that with the Lightning. You see that with everybody. There's a commitment there.
Yeah, no, there is. Like there can be a hangover from a team winning a championship, especially, you know, when you play as many games as you have to play to win a Stanley Cup. Of course, it's a weird year, right? Because, you know, they won a cup in a bubble, and then didn't quite know when the next season was going to start. And, you know, there's a lot of, this is like no other, but I think what you see now is it's almost like they're taking up where they left off last, you know, in the bubble. It's that, mm-hmm. you know, it's a beautifully constructed team. He's a great coach.
Yeah, he is.
You know, and,
he really
is. You know, and they got some reinforcements. They got a pretty good reinforcement after the season ended. So, but it's, yeah, the interesting thing about them is they can play it a lot of different ways. And you're seeing that in this series. Look, Barry Trotz and that the Islanders are not going to give them, let them breathe. And if there's any let up or any kind of the wobble, the Islanders will beat them. But this is also a team that, you know, you can see the why. You can see Tampa. Let's say if Vegas comes through that other series, and Vegas is a hell of a team, mm-hmm. and I'm taking nothing away from the Habs, but Vegas is obviously still the clear favorite there. Tampa's every bit their match. That'd be a great series.
Yeah, especially with their goaltender playing the way the way he's playing right now. They are very much their match. And I thought it was interesting watching watching Kelly Rudy kind of break down a little bit some of the goaltending. I wouldn't say the goaltending miscues that they were Marc-Andre Fleury.
That was definitely
they were miscues. I mean And that's something that
actually,
I think
Mike Bossy was pretty explicit about that one when he had him on yesterday as well.
Yeah, he was pretty clear about that.
He didn't mince words. No.
No, he did not. That series will resume tomorrow. The Habs and the Vegas Golden Knights will play tonight at the Bell Center. Again, the news of the day, if you want to call it that, Montreal Canadiens head coach Dominique Ducharme was not at the morning skate because of what the team is calling irregularities with his COVID-19 test results. There are reports out there that the test was positive, but we will wait and see. He is, according to NHL.com, fully vaccinated. And it's a similar situation we saw. I think it was a game 6 of the Colorado series where Jared Bednar was not at the skate because of an irregularity.
Mm-hmm.
And he ended up being cleared in time for the game. So what is the latest on Dominique Ducharme? The latest on the Montreal Canadiens. Ren Lavoie is our NHL insider at Tavia Sports. He'll join us next. This is Writer's Block.
Writer's Block with Jeff Blair, Stephen Brunt, and Richard Deitch on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
So there is some breaking news out of Montreal. Head coach Dominique Ducharme of the Montreal Canadiens appears to have tested positive for COVID-19, Stephen Brunt, which means, according to the NHL, it would be, a 10-day...
Correct, yeah.
10-day hiatus.
At least.
I was going to say, the timing's not great. I mean, there's never...
yeah?
It would go without saying...
Alexander Burrows,
hours,
the head coach.
Yeah, hours before game 3 of what has become a suddenly very interesting series between the Vegas Golden Knights and the Montreal Canadiens. Let's not waste any more time. Let's bring in Ren Lavoie, our NHL insider with TVA Sports. Ren, thank you for joining us on what is a hectic day. So what is the latest on Dominique Ducharme? And what is the impact here? What do you think the impact would be of this?
That's the great question and the real question right now. We don't know, okay? And this is why it's getting really, really, really interesting. We're in a situation right now where obviously Dominique Ducharme won't coach tonight, okay? Tested positive in Vegas yesterday. Well, left Vegas yesterday with the team. He had a positive test, but, you know, testing sometimes is not always accurate. Mm. So today when he arrived at the rink, he was told by Dr. Mulder that he had a positive test and he needs to take another test right now and leave the arena in Brossard and go back home. It's what's surprising here is Dominic was one of the first people in the organization to receive the vaccine, the first dose, and a second dose earlier this month. So that's why it makes this story even more interesting in a way. I'm told it's not the first time it happens. I'm told that a Blues player, I don't remember his name right now, had both vaccines and tested positive and had to quarantine for some time. So now the real question, and why I'm saying it's really interesting, is what's next, okay? Because the what's next can have a major impact on everything. First of all, losing your head coach is not ideal. After that, we will have to wait. Obviously, I'm pretty sure that Luke Richardson and all the rest of the coaching staff tested negative. But what will be the Quebec government decision on that? Are they going to say, this is close contact? You have to go back home. Everybody needs to go back home. If there's hopefully no players receive a positive test, if there's one or two players who receive a positive test today, there won't be a game tonight. So that's the way it is right now. I feel that the Montreal Canadiens right now are in a crisis mode. There's no other way to say it. We won't sugarcoat it. That's the reality. And so we'll know more, I guess, in the next hour about what's next. I know Mark Bergevin will talk at one point. I expect him to talk around 5:30, maybe 6 o'clock today, and probably we'll know more then. But it's unexpected. Let's put it this way.
Oh yeah. Yeah, the wheels are turning my head here listening to you, because I hadn't even really thought about the government protocols here. But
yeah,
you know, so but presumably no one else tested positive in Las Vegas. So if you know, what would be the next? Would the next step be to retest everybody on the team, or is the close contact enough? A reason to, like, again, you probably know. Yeah. I and again, I'm not sure what the up to date protocols are with the Quebec government, yeah. But. You know, in terms of what we understand, what you would understand, you know, getting permission to play these games in Quebec, what would the dividing line be here between being allowed to continue and not being allowed to continue? Would it be contact, or would it be a positive? Would it have to be another positive test?
Listen, it's obvious that there's two different rules, right?
Yeah,
you have the Quebec government rules. And you have the league rules. I think the league rules are crystal clear. If everybody tested negative, there's no reason to panic. Okay. But if we may go back to what happened with, remember Joel Armia, mm-hmm. somewhere, I think in March, if I'm not mistaken, it was in March. It felt like a long time ago. Joel tested positive. But there was a close contact with Jesper Kotkaniemi, okay? Jesper Kotkaniemi never tested positive. But because of that close contact, the league and the Quebec government at that point decided that we need to stop playing for a while. Mm. So that's exactly what happened. So it's easy for me to say this is what's exactly 100%. This is what's going to happen, but I'm not. I'm pretty sure that as of right now, there is some meetings between the league, the Canadians, Quebec government to know what's next and to take care of the what's next. And if the Quebec government feels that even with some negative test to COVID today, even if everybody is fully vaccinated inside the organization, everybody, mm-hmm. the question is, are they safe? And when I'm saying, and this is the other gray area that I need to put out there. I'm saying that everybody is fully vaccinated, but you need to wait 2 weeks to be
right.
quote unquote fully vaccinated. We're not there yet.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's why I'm saying it's so, it's really, really interesting. The players were received their vaccine before the start of the third round. So a couple of days, maybe, or maybe 3 days before the start of the third round. So it's been a week. I know Dominic Ducharme received it around, if I'm not mistaken, June 9th. So it's not 2 weeks yet for him either. So that's the thing. That's why it's really interesting. You're not, quote unquote, fully vaccinated. Even if you got the shot, you need to wait 2 weeks for that to have, I guess, the signature, whatever it is, the stamp on it. And so that's why right now it's really, but really a tricky situation.
Wow, is it ever? Boy, there's more than, you know, that. Well, I think we were just sitting here thinking, well, I guess Alex Burrows is going to coach tonight. But, the implications here stretch out into this whole series, don't they?
That's the thing. That's where it's, I'm pretty sure it's not a good feeling for Mark Bergevin. Mm. It's not a good feeling for Jeff Molson, because everybody knows around the league that if you have an outbreak inside your team, or if the Quebec government is saying there'll be no game being played for the next 2 weeks,
yeah,
it's the end of the Montreal Canadiens playoffs. That's it. That's all. Even maybe 10 days. I'm not sure the week will wait 1 week, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's the end of the story, because everybody needs to play, and you need to make sure that scheduling is going accordingly. And I believe, remember David Perron, my good friend David, tested positive before the start of the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
The Blues tried everything to push the start of the first round for, you know, just a few days. Like in Canada, the Canadian division, they're still playing. Let's push the start of our first round a few days, like in Canada. And the league said, no way, we're not doing it. So now it's really tricky, to be honest.
I'm sure you mentioned this, but was this at Brassard that he was tested, or was it at the Bell Center? It was at the Bell Center.
So two things. What I'll do, you know what? Give me. I'm calling you back in 2 minutes.
Yep.
I need to answer that phone call.
Go ahead.
Yeah, go
ahead, Ren. It's Ren Law, our NHL insider.
News is happening.
Sports. Yeah. News is happening.
Yeah, and he's the boy. There's no one I would rather have on the show at this moment.
But I had not thought of that. I had not thought of the fact I mean, I just assumed if he's test positive, as you said, well, then Alex Burrows takes over. But there is.
There's another layer here, right? So
it's an interesting test case. I will put it that way. It's an interesting test case.
It sure is
It's an interesting test case in some ways to see what the appetite of the Quebec government is for this.
Yep, because again, let's set the context here. You know, things in Quebec right now are, as with in Ontario, mm-hmm. are much, much better, mm-hmm. right? They've opened up the province to a large degree. Their case count is very, very low. They waived the curfew in bars so people could watch the games from the West Coast. And, of course, they allowed people into the arena.
Right.
Made a special concession dispensation to allow people into the arena to watch the games. Not a lot of people. And they increased it slightly for this game.
Yeah.
So there has been, understanding, that the Montreal Canadiens in the Final Four of the Stanley Cup playoffs is not something that happens every day.
No, and there seems to be, and I'm just going to jump in. There seems to be, my understanding is there seems to be a great deal of public support for this.
Oh, yeah.
This isn't the government going against
it. No. I think there's a ton of, I think it's, again, because, they look around and they say things are, the vaccinations are rolling along and the case rates are way down.
Mm-hmm.
And again, if this was being played, as Ren pointed out, if this was about NHL rules, they would test everybody, and if no one else tested positive, the show would go on, and Ducharme would be away until he cleared. But there's another layer of rules here, but the implications of that are not just the coach not being there. As Ren, if you kind of start connecting the dots here,
if he's in the plane, everybody's in the plane.
Yeah, and if this team can't play for 10 days, that's, I think what Ren's saying is that they would essentially default the series because the playoffs are going to go on.
I cannot see that happening.
Well, no, I can't.
I can't see that happening.
I can't either.
Steven.
Oh no! But again, the Quebec government. It'll be interesting to see.
Yeah. Right? The messaging around this is gonna be very interesting, because what we have here is a very high profile individual who has been fully vaccinated.
Yes.
Turning in a positive test.
Yeah, which can happen. Like, again, vaccines are not 100%, and you know, part of what they, you know, you can test positive and the vaccines will still mitigate illness.
That's the idea. The idea is that you may still get COVID-19, but you're not going to get sick from it.
Exactly. And so you would turn up positive on a test.
Yeah.
But so this is not, you know, this is not evidence that vaccines don't do what they're supposed to do. They do. But you know, the protocols are the protocols, right? Yeah. So
I had not even crossed that bridge.
Well, because
I hadn't thought of it.
But I think Ren's right. That it's not like the playoffs are going to shut down for 2 weeks right now. They're not. They can't, right? They're like this thing.
So I mean, I wonder if you would you call up? I don't know. Is the Laval Rocket even? Are there? I mean, I don't know. How would you go about doing it?
The dog's age, right?
It's funny that we're talking about this. Because as we're watching the Euro, and I was just thinking about this and went on, one of the things that Spain had to do for their Euro is they have a shadow team, their under 21 team or under 23 team they put together, because they had a COVID outbreak on their team. So for their last game as preparation for the Euro, they sent out the quote unquote shadow Spanish team.
Yeah, I don't think there's this you know, like there's the
no,
they, you got the I presume they've got the Black Aces traveling with them, so you know what you normally do in the playoffs, so you have guys who don't dress for the games but are available more than you would normally carry. Those guys I presume are there.
Mm-hmm.
But no, there are no good alternatives here in terms of on that side, unless the government makes, you know, what you might argue is a pragmatic decision, never mind a hockey decision, but a pragmatic decision saying if everybody else clears here, you know, they're not a risk to society. Maybe there's ways of creating a little mini bubble here around this team as it exists for the next few days.
Or I imagine what you could really do. I mean, again, this would we're talking about messaging here. I wonder if maybe you don't say, if you're not looking at this and saying, look, part of the reason we waived all these things, as we said at the time, and indeed as Lisa McLeod said in discussing Ontario, is that we have faith in the league to look after this. We have faith in the protocols the leagues have put in place. So maybe that gives the Quebec government, you know, a way of saying,
look, a little bit of cover here, which
this happened, and the league is taking care of it. That's entirely possible.
Well, and I honestly, again, just. And we are kind of, believe me, we're processing this on the fly.
Well, yeah, folks, we won't know anything until Mark Bergevin talks to the press, and that'll be during Tim and Friends.
I think that would be a pragmatic decision, and I'm not sure it would be a wrong decision to defer to say that, you know, that the we'll follow the league protocols here.
Mm-hmm.
We are, you know, we're testing everybody like crazy. There have been no other positives, and we're going to allow the game to happen. But it's a boy. If I was the Premier of Quebec, this is not something I would want on my plate right now.
Just while we're waiting to see if Ren can rejoin us, that's fine. You know what? Ren's got work to do. Don't worry about it. Let's Ren go. I've been there and done that. Well, actually, no, I haven't actually been on a show when it's happened. But considering Ren's history here, don't forget getting the ticket, the $300-some ticket for talking on the phone.
Yes,
while he was driving. I think we can let Ren go and do his work. Again, the breaking news, Dominic Ducharme, the head coach of the Montreal Canadiens, has tested positive for COVID-19. He has been vaccinated. Marc Bergevin, according to Ren Lavoie, is expected to address the media sometime around 5:30 or 6 o'clock. Again, obviously, this situation is going to be fluid. There's clearly a lot of folks involved in the decision-making process right now. So it's really kind of pointless to speculate until we see how far this has gone, what the league is going to do. Will there be a postponement? What the province is going to do, pardon me.
Yeah.
That is...
Because we know what the league would do. Like, the league would let them play under their rules.
So before we break, though, I can give you the Blue Jays lineup just to reinforce the fact.
George Springer leading off?
George Springer ain't here.
Oh,
George Springer's enjoying a lovely day off wherever the Trenton Thunder... /Trenton Buffalo Thundering Herd are. It's Semyon Bichette, Guerrero, Grichuk, Biggio, Gurriel Jr., Panic is DHing, Espinal third, Riley Adams behind the plate, and Robbie Ray pitching. And I mentioned Vladdy. Panic's DHing. So Vladdy is playing first base, and that is against a – yes, Derek? Oh, okay. So Ren Laval will be rejoining us. So we'll see if there's any further update. This is a beauty of breaking news, right?
Yes.
The beauty of breaking news. What did we do before all this, before we had the internet and everything like that? We had to have a landline. Don't go anywhere. Stay by your phone.
Yeah. I think...
Scotland, by the way, just came close to scoring. Okay, Ren, thank you very much for your patience. We'll get through this right away. So we're expecting to hear from Mark Bergevin. Have you heard anything else?
Yeah. Yeah, so at 5:30, the league will send a communique, but everybody got tested again today. Mm-hmm. So, and as of right now, so when I'm saying again, obviously you need to be tested in the morning. Mm-hmm. Okay. And after that, with a positive test, the Quebec government and the league said you need to retest everybody. And so those tests should come in the next hour or so. If the league is not sending a communique around 5:30, it's because the results are not already out. Mm-hmm. Okay. And that's why they'll have to wait. But as of right now, the only positive test is really Dominique Ducharme. But I don't have the results of the second test, right? Yeah. But when you think about it, if you have a regular test in the morning, the chances that you'll test positive in the other tests in the afternoons are close to be slim.
Yeah.
To none, I guess.
Yeah. Ren, listen, we appreciate you calling back, my friend. We're going to let you run and do some work.
No problem. Thanks
as always for that.
Yeah, I know. It's going to be busy, and thanks for your understanding.
Oh, no sweat, my
friend.
Thank you, Ren. Be well. Have a great weekend.
Have a good one.
Take care. That's Ren Laval, NHL insider with AVS Sports.
Okay, so I'm just going to interpret what that as being that they are going to follow the league protocol.
Yes.
That if no one else tests positive,
the game would go on.
The game will go on. That's what it sounds like.
And that seems to be, again, if you put your faith in the league protocol in order to allow these games to be played, it would stand to reason that you would put your faith in league protocol to deal with it.
Yes.
And I will say this, and not the kind of, and this isn't to be a shill for the NHL or any professional league, but by and large, professional sports leagues have done a pretty good job of dealing with these situations.
They've had to, because they knew what the stakes
were. They've had to. And
yeah.
Yes, and I understand. They've all got a lot of money, and there's a lot at stake. But by and large, the leagues have done a really good job of this. Craig Forrest is part of Sportsnet's Euro 2020/2021 coverage. I can't believe he's going to join us.
We're going to drag him away from this.
65 minutes gone. England and Scotland are scoreless. Scotland came I think it was a Tyrone Mings header, wasn't it, Derek, away from scoring somebody. Or maybe it was Reece James, whoever was on the line, and Pickford made a save as well. So tragic Scotland against England is going on. We'll bring Craig Forrest on, and who knows, maybe we'll get more breaking news with Craig Forrest. This is Writer's Block. This is Sportsnet 590, The Fan. All right, welcome back to Writer's Block on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Again, the breaking news, Montreal Canadiens head coach Dominique Ducharme has tested positive for COVID-19. He has been vaccinated. We were joined by Ren Laval at the top of the hour. If you go according to the league regulations, he will be out of commission or out of service or not available to the team for a minimum of 10 days. No indication as to anything beyond that right now. Ren did mention that there's that all the Montreal Canadiens, I guess everybody else around the team, is tested negative this morning, and they will be retested again, and that will determine where the NHL goes from here. But you could speculate, but I tend to think that as I've said, if you've allowed the team back in to Canada, if you've allowed this to happen and said you trust the NHL's protocols, if you're the Quebec government, you're probably trusting their protocols here as well.
Yeah, I think so. Plus, you don't want to shut this series down. Let's just be honest here. You also don't want to do that.
Yeah, I don't think it would look. I don't think it would look particularly. You know,
if this was 3 months ago, maybe it's a different conversation. If things were raging a little more than they are right now, but
this is the thing, right? You know, and this is because I think there's a sense there's you know, we all want to think that we're through this, and we all want to think that this is done, or at least that we're coming out in the other end. But there are going to be these instances. You know, we're seeing now the issues of dealing with people who aren't vaccinated, people who are vaccinated but still test positive, which is possible. As we said, I think about 16 months ago, wherever in the hell this thing started, the coming out isn't going to be smooth.
Yeah, there's going to be glitches. Yeah, you don't, and it's not instantaneous.
No, and that's, you know, I would be willing to bet that we will see other examples of this in other sports at some point.
Mm-hmm.
We may be living with this for a while.
Yeah, and we're gonna have there's gonna be a very vigorous conversation about vaccinated versus unvaccinated athletes.
Yes, well that's
already happening.
That is already happening. And then, of course, we get into the whole comparing vaccines thing, which is a completely different story. If the entire English soccer team comes over and is vaccinated with AstraZeneca, will they be allowed to go see Bruce Springsteen? This is a question.
As of today, no.
So this is a question. I wish someone would ask me, do you want to go see Bruce Springsteen? That would be the thing. But anyhow, we're awaiting Craig Forrest. Craig Forrest and Derek Brandy are in the middle of an intense soccer conversation.
They just took Harry Kane out of the match, though. Rashford in for Kane.
There you go. I can't believe that Craig is actually going to join us. Like England and Scotland? Come on. It is 0-0 in the 75th minute. England has just taken off Harry Kane. They have put on Marcus Rashford. And,
there are two ways for this to go right now.
Yes.
Right? There's the greatest moment in modern Scottish football history.
Yeah.
Well, they got to win probably for that. But a really great moment in modern Scottish football history if they play out the draw. Or there's a terrible ball bounces in off someone's butt, or there's a terrible penalty call in added time and England squeaks it out.
Well, let's bring in Craig Forrest. Craig, thank you for doing this. I cannot believe you agreed to this, to be quite honest. Yeah. I was
Thank you, pal.
And I was ready to give you a hall pass. A hall pass in this one. What have you made of this match so far? I mean, we've been kind of watching while we've been doing our work, but what have you made of this match so far?
Well, I think Scotland so far has done what they've had to do when, you know, they're stymieing the English side. I think that shows the substitution we just saw with Kane coming off. The frustrations that they've basically frustrated the English side and had a couple good chances themselves with Pickford making a save.
You know, that's what it's funny. We now again, as Jeff said, we can only watch this in bits, Craig, but boy, that, you know, England looks so, you know, looks so fluid and skillful in that last match against Croatia, but they've been made to look pretty static here against Scotland. Again, hats off to Scotland for being, at least kind of building the wall. They seem to have done a pretty good job of that and just turning this into a standing and staring contest.
Yeah, you know, they probably put a lot of the thought, obviously, into the match and thought, well, you know, these English players, I mean, league football is what they're generally used to, and that goes with the Scottish side as well. But it's very difficult breaking down a defensive block that just decide to do that. And you don't see that. You see it in English football, but you always have an outlet man or you you expect to sort of get out. But over and over, you don't see that play because, you know, you're playing at home and fans aren't going to accept it. But the English players are still very, you know, used to that faster-paced match. And it's, you know, when it comes to international football and three games in a group stage and, you know, the importance of every minute and not losing matches and breaking down teams that, you know, needs to be broken down in a phone booth. And I think we see that with the Spanish, the Brazilians, the Argentinians, you know, the greatest teams in the world have been able to break teams down that do that when it really, really matters. And we haven't been able to see that from England consistently in international football.
Now, Craig, we obviously this is different times for this tournament. It's a year later than was scheduled. We have gone through a pandemic season. Everything that's meant for these players, there are, you know, it's a different qualifying format now with the, you know, I guess the, I don't know what you'd call them, the most talented third place finishers advancing. I mean, there's a lot of, it's a little different now, and you've got five subs, so it's a little different than we're used to. What have you made of the football? Because, you know, other than today's match between Sweden and Slovakia, which is like 3 hours of my life I'll never get back, I thought it's actually been pretty decent.
Yeah, it has. You know, it's inconsistent with the different matches, but some of the teams have surprised, you know, overly offensively. You know, the Italian side have been just fantastic. They're going to meet harder opposition down the road, but so far they've been just absolutely brilliant. Their runs going forward, Mancini's got them defending really well. I think they've only given up a shot. But, yeah, when you have a setup in a tournament that was the very best, for sure, and it's still up there. I think we have 16 of the top 25 teams in the world in this Euro, but when you have an expansion of a tournament, and then with third-place teams getting through, you can do what Portugal did 4 years ago and draw three games in a row and get out with a zero-goal differential. And so that always comes into play, and I always worry about that internationally, and you see it even where the World Cup and the top two go through, that teams come out to play, not to lose. You know, they're not playing to win necessarily. That's a bonus. Just don't lose the game. I mean, that's why, you know, the Italians have traditionally done so well internationally. They don't lose games.
Yeah, kind of the tournament football, right? Where they start, yeah, and you see them at the beginning of a tournament, and they can seem so, you know, so negative, and you think, well, this, and then, you know, then you're watching them play in the final, right? That's traditional. Now here they come out like, you know, their hair's on fire. It's a whole other thing, and it's been fun. I guess the other thing, Craig, and again, maybe it's, you know, this tournament, you know, there was a, in its, you know, when it was smaller, the Euros were spectacular because there were no bad matchups, right? It was really concentrated. There is more of a hierarchy in this tournament, like that we haven't seen the best sides really pushed yet, you know, and when they, like, I'm looking forward to seeing, you know, some France or an Italy or a Belgium, you know, or Portugal, some of these teams collide, because I think it's going to be pretty amazing, but most of them are cruising right now.
Yeah, other than Group F.
Yes.
Right?
Well, that's
where you got the Germany-France lineup, but, and Portugal in that group as well. But other than that, yeah, it's I think until and I think it makes it a little bit tougher and harder to predict too, certainly with crossovers and all that. It reminds me of March Madness, trying to pick those picks all the way through. Good luck. It's sort of like that, because you try to pick who's going to go out, who's going to finish third, who's going to be the third place teams that get knocked out. But I think we'll see the usual suspects when it gets down to it. But when it's 16 and it's single knockout from there, you know, that's four rounds, and that makes it very difficult. You have to be a little bit lucky somewhere down the road when you get to single game knockouts, even, you know, that you need that. And I think we saw that with Greece four tournaments ago, Portugal last tournament. So it can happen with it's just who's it going to be, but it's hard to pick the winner for this tournament, that's for sure.
Shifting focus a little bit, I wanted to ask you about the preliminary roster John Herdman submitted for the Gold Cup today, the Canadian men's team. Ayo Akinola was on the preliminary roster. He's not on the U.S. roster. Look, this is a guy who was one of the real breakout stars of the MLS bubble last year. He would be a handy addition for John Herdman to have going into these World Cup qualifiers and going into the Gold Cup. How do you think he would fit into this program and fit into this team?
Well, you know, John Herdman has got himself a really good problem, and that is, picking his best 11 because they've got some incredible talent in that lineup, and players are going to be, you know, really worthy of getting in any Canadian team in the past are going to be sitting on the bench. But to strengthen the squad and to bring in that extra bit of talent is absolutely imperative. And I think that we're seeing a time with the Canadian national system where players are eager to play for Canada mm-hmm. as opposed to avoiding playing for Canada. And that's really good to see. It's been a long time coming. We've missed out on a few players because of just for various reasons. And these guys have a great belief in themselves. And John Herdman is regularly talking to all these players. Hasn't been able to see them play as much as he would like to, obviously with COVID. But he's a great man manager and women manager, as we know. So and tournament football because a lot of managers that haven't experienced tournament football before. And knowing what to expect in games, he'll have every moment down on his diary for every minute that he has with the team and preparing. They have meetings about meetings, these guys, his staff, you know, so he's not going to ever be able to look himself in the mirror and say, you know, I didn't work hard enough. I didn't try hard enough. I should have done different things. You might have questions down the road, but it won't be effort from John Herdman. So good luck to them because, honestly, I think they have, in my opinion, the third best squad in CONCACAF, and they now have the pressure to go and prove it to get in the top 3.5 spots, which they're certainly capable of doing, which is so exciting. But they have to also expect walking out in the first game, I believe it's Honduras at home, that there's going to be several thousand Honduran fans find their way in. It'll be pro-Canadian, but it won't be all Canadian. Mm-hmm. And that's something the players, I hope, will know what will happen. I mean, it happened a few cycles ago when we had Honduras and Montreal. We were calling the game on Sportsnet, me and Jerry Dobson. And also with BMO being the sponsor, they had blue and white blow-up clappers, which was the Honduran colors.
Yeah.
It was just it was a sea of blue and white. It was just, I didn't see anything like that since the Jamaican steel band in Vancouver when we played Jamaica. Or Brazil. We had the Brazilian dancers come out before the game. I mean, we're all open arms here in Canada when it comes to football.
And Craig, where are you? I'm with you. They're the third most. You can make the argument they're the third most on talent, the third best team in the octagonal. But you just alluded to, you know, not just the non home crowd home crowds, but they're going to have to go into some bad places, right? We all have fond memories of that San Pedro Sula match, you know. So they're going to have to go into some hostile spots, and that is not necessarily – not every Canadian team has thrived doing that. So where – given all that, where are your expectations for Canada?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, honestly, I think the empty stadiums don't hurt us at all. Even when you look at the Haitian two-legged, that, you know, if that stadium is full of Haitians, it's a really, really exciting stadium to play in, and you're going to get a different atmosphere altogether. So now – with the pandemic and with fans coming back into stadiums, at least looking like it for now, it's going to be difficult, as you know. Those places are incredibly hard to get results. One thing I noticed even against the Haitians, the players have to remember not to react to referees' decisions because it's going to cost you. And players will get under the skin of the Canadian players to get reactions from them, and you know how it goes. One mistake, one lash out, one little flick to an ear, and you're sent off. We've seen it happen over and over again. So that's sort of part of the game. We have to, you just have to get out. You have to stamp it out because it's going to cost you.
Craig, really good of you to join us today. Thanks so much. Go watch the final 5 minutes of this.
My pleasure, guys. Great to speak to you again. I miss seeing you in the office.
Yes, likewise, Craig.
Likewise, my friend. Be well.
You as well, guys. Cheers.
Craig Forrest, Sportsnet's Euro analyst. We'll be back.
Scotland on the front foot here, by the way, the last 5 minutes.
I'm watching. We'll be back to wrap it up and turn you over to Tim and friends. It's Writer's Block. The Blue Jays have made a move. They've recalled Anthony Kay and sent TJ Zoik back down. TJ Zoik starting yesterday for Steven Matz, who's on the COVID list.
It was a very TJ Zoik start.
It was a TJ Zoik start. Be worried about a pitcher with TJ as his initials because of Tommy John. By the way, Scotland and England drew 0-0.
They'll be raising pints. And well, they're always raising pints, but the Scots will be raising pints.
Maybe it's Friday night. They'll be
But there'll be some panic on the other side. There'll be recriminations.
A little bit now. Well, this might set up for both of them to go through.
That would be great. Yeah. Again, Scotland doesn't get to have nice things in football, so it would be nice if they got it. This is a moral victory. So.
Yep. Again, the news that we've been following all afternoon: the head coach of the Montreal Canadiens, Dominique Ducharme, has tested positive for COVID-19. We believe there will be an announcement from the NHL in the next hour, the announcement will be made after we're led to believe again, all Montreal Canadiens players and staff are tested. And if the tests are negative, and they were negative this morning, then one would assume that the game would go ahead. That seems to be the indication anyhow. I know Eric Engels tweeted that Sportsnet's Eric Engels tweeted that he had gotten hold of Bill Daly, somebody in Bill Daly's office, and they said that right now they are not looking at canceling the game. So, which would be probably operating under the assumption that Dominique Ducharme is okay and healthy, yeah. The thing now is whether or not the game would go ahead.
Well, and that would suggest that the game is in the NHL's hands, not the government's hands, right? That it's the decision is being left to the league. Which is, you know, it's an interesting decision. I got no problem with it, but there, you know, there were other possibilities as our pal Randall Watt alluded to when he was on.
Yeah. Including the nightmare scenario of, you know, what happens if you have to shut the series down? One team has had a positive test. The other team hasn't had a positive test. You forfeit. I mean,
well, you hate to start talking about that stuff, but you know, you're backing up, you know, against a whole bunch of, you know, I don't think the NHL is going to take a 2-week pause in the playoffs at this point.
And a reminder that this, again, we're talking about a person who in the head coach, Dominique Ducharme, who was been vaccinated twice.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we always feel we have to remind you of the story that you can, getting the vaccine means you're not going to get sick. It doesn't prevent you from actually having catching COVID.
Yeah, and he was less than 2 weeks from his second shot, so that's that. He's also within that range. So
within that range.
I'm not. This is not a reason to go out and say, "Well, it's not worth getting vaccinated." It is. Please, go get your shots.
Do it. Do it. Do it now.
Yeah.
Do it now. Do it now.
But it sounds like there'll be a hockey game tonight. It sounds like Alex Burrows will be the head coach of the Montreal Canadiens.
And it is a reminder, though. Just again, it's not like we're all kind of giddy right now, and with good reason.
Yes.
And there's nothing wrong with that because we've been looking forward to this moment for a long time. But it is just a little reminder that there are still some logistical hurdles to clear here, and that it's, as we've been saying along, it's not simply going to be a matter of somebody pushing a buzzer and saying, okay, everybody, over the top, over the barricades, mm-hmm. life is back as usual. And there will continue. Testing is going to be a reality for a while, certainly with athletes. And, that's where we are. And we didn't even really talk to Ren about the hockey game, but Brent, if Montreal goes up 2-1 in this series.
It's, you know, what's interesting, you have to, the whole dynamic around the game tonight is going to be fascinating, right? Because we are once again in kind of uncharted territory. You know, you've had, coaches have to leave a series or something because they got ill.
Mm-hmm.
That has happened in the past. But if the Canadiens get an early lead in this game, you know, let's just take the coaching thing out of it for now and with that dynamic. But, you know, the biggest difference between game one and game two is that they had the big surge at the beginning in game one, but they didn't score.
They didn't score, right.
Game two, they get up 2-0. And, it was a nail biter at the end. And that Vegas team is really, really good. And mm-hmm. it's also pretty resilient in its mm-hmm. own right. But, you know, the Canadiens got the better goaltending mm-hmm. and they got that lead and they could ride it out. It's not like there's going to be 15,000 people in the building cheering them on, but there's going to be a few. And if they could get the first goal, even just the first goal in that game, because then we're having we've talked about it from the beginning. This is an uphill battle in this series, right? Vegas comes from a tougher conference. They beat a great team in Colorado. they beat their nemesis in Minnesota on the way here. And there's a lot of reason to think, you know, that they've just got more than a Montreal team to finish fourth in the, you know, in the North. But that's not how playoff series are won and lost sometimes. And I'll tell you, yeah, if they can get out front in this game early and then Carey Price starts doing Carey Price stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Stanley Cups have been won that way in Montreal before. I saw it, you know, a lot of us saw it where teams said, that's not the best team. Well, sometimes the best team doesn't win.
Yeah, and we thought after game one, we looked at how Montreal played, and they played we thought they played as best as they could possibly play. Game two, I don't know if they were a huge amount better.
But they scored.
They scored, exactly. They scored. And if I'm a Montreal Canadiens fan right now, I'm saying, you know what? Two games against Vegas, we've gotten a good start that we need. One of them we didn't score. One of them we couldn't score. We did in the other one. I think that's a template. And if I'm with you, if it happens early tonight, it's going to be riveting. Mm-hmm. And if Montreal takes a 2-1 lead over Vegas, wow.
Then off we go.
Oh, absolutely. Mr. Brunt, thank you for doing this.
All right. I'll see you in a bit. I'm going fishing next week.
Going fishing. Well, enjoy the fish and enjoy your trip. Richard Deitch will join us next week. Tim and friends are next. They'll give you all the latest on the news out of Montreal. Again, Canadiens head coach Dominic Ducharme has tested positive for COVID-19. We await formal announcement, formal indication, formal news from the NHL office. Tim and friends are next.